happened. VOA 1, the hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Dan Friedel.
And I'm Katie Weaver. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak slowly, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, John Russell looks at a religious official in Portugal who is trying to reach his audience with electronic music. Then we have a special Thanksgiving weekend edition of Words and Their Stories. After that, Kelly Jean Kelly closes the program with America's Presidents. This week it's Jimmy Carter. But first, Gina Bennett has the Education Report.
A federal study of all public schools says that America's Black and Latino students have reduced chances of success. The data came from the Civil Rights Data Collection, which is a survey by the U.S. Education Department. It aims to examine measures of educational opportunity. The Associated Press reported on some of the findings. The study said Black and Latino students were less likely to be in higher level classes and to receive teaching from certified teachers. The findings suggested effects that have a lasting influence on students' ability to learn and finish college. The Education Department gathered data during the 2020-2021 school year. That year, most public schools were at least partially closed, and teaching took place online because of COVID-19 restrictions. Speaking about the survey results, U.S. Education Secretary Miguel Cardona said access to educational opportunity in this country remains unequal. The U.S. Supreme Court declared segregation in public schools unlawful nearly 70 years ago. However, information in the federal survey said Black and Latino students were more likely to attend schools with lower percentages of certified teachers. The data also suggested that Black and Latino students are more likely to be in schools that have security guards or police officers, but no counselor. Cardona called this appalling because of rising rates of mental health difficulties for young people. The new data also showed barriers to higher level or advanced classes. Taking advanced classes improves a student's chances of going to college, studies suggest. But Black and Latino students were far less likely to take such classes. Black students represented 15% of all high school students, but they made up just 8% of students in advanced placement, or AP, science, and 6% in AP math. Latino students represented 27% of all high school students, but made up 20% in AP science and 19% in AP math classes. Catherine E. Lauman is Assistant Secretary for Civil Rights at the Department of Education. She called differences between students in the civil rights data collection information troubling. The data showed that in 5,500 public high schools where Black and Latino students make up 75% of all students, there were not as many math, science, and computer classes as at other schools. in 35% of schools with a high number of Black and Latino students, calculus was not offered. It was available at 54% of schools with low Black and Latino numbers. The Education Department found that students with disabilities and those learning English also faced problems. The Civil Rights Data Collection is an effort by the U.S. Department of Education to gather information about American public schools. I'm Gina Bennett.
Guillaume Peixoto, a religious official in northern Portugal, has been busy this month. He celebrated religious services, watched over remembrances for the dead, and prepared electronic music for his next international DJ performance. For this 49-year-old Catholic priest, music has become an important way to reach people at a time when religion is becoming less popular, especially among young people. With electronic music, I can take some message. I can be where young people are, Peixoto said recently. They can think, if it's possible for a priest to be a DJ, it's possible for me to like music and festivals and be Christian. Peixoto became more well known when the organizers of World Youth Day in Lisbon asked him to wake up the pilgrims at 7 a.m. before Pope Francis's open-air mass in August. When Peixoto was first sent to the village of Landos in the mid-2000s, the area needed money to pay for work done on the main church. But local people were tired of normal activities such as bake sales and door-knocking campaigns to raise money. So Peixoto called on the youth music groups to start karaoke events for support. Within a few years, debts were paid off, church repairs were completed, and Peixoto was taking professional DJ classes. Food and drink sales, as well as other donations, all go back to the church, which is readying for a big building project, a new center for youth activities. This is why I'm happy to be here, said Andrea Flores, who belongs to Peixoto's second parish in the nearby village of Amorim. Faith is to make others happy. For Peixoto, DJing has become an important way to spread religious messages. I'm making these messages arrive where the church is not, he said of performances such as one at a recent Halloween festival with some 30,000 people. In Portugal, about half of young people say they have no religion. Most participate less in services, have less confidence in the church, and pray less than older generations, says a recent study by the Catholic Portuguese University in Braga. It's very important to me to not only be the priest DJ, but be the shepherd of the community, Peixoto said recently. The world is not so closed to Jesus, but you need to speak the language. I'm John Russell.
Now, the VOA Learning English Program, Words and Their Stories. There are certain times of the year when we stop and think about all the things that make us happy or bring us joy. Some people even make a list of these things. In English, we have a saying for this: to count your blessings. When we count our blessings, we note all the wonderful things in our lives. This helps us to appreciate how good life is. Thanksgiving is a time when many Americans count their blessings. The United States observes this holiday on the fourth Thursday in November. Counting your blessings is important. It shows that you are grateful. Gratitude is a feeling of appreciation or thanks. When people count their blessings, they can say it like this: I am thankful for my family. I am thankful for my friends. I am thankful for my health. It is better to be grateful for our blessings than to take them for granted. When we take something for granted, we do not appreciate it. Sometimes we are not appreciative of our good fortune and blessings until they are gone. But now let's take a step back. What exactly is a blessing? In English, the word blessing has at least two meanings. As we said, a blessing is something that brings you happiness or helps you. To religious people, a blessing is approval and help from a higher source, God. A blessing can also be a sign of approval. It gives you permission to do something. For example, a traditional marriage custom involves a blessing. If a young man wants to marry a young woman, he may want to first get her family's blessing. Now, when we want to show our recognition of all the little things that prove helpful, we sometimes say, "Give thanks for small blessings." We often say this expression in the middle of a troubling or difficult time. So let's say a friend of yours is angry about a flat tire on his car. But then he stops and thinks for a minute and says, "Well, at least I have a car. I should count myself lucky and give thanks for small blessings." Now, not all blessings are simple and easy to recognize. Some are more complex than others. That brings us to the expression mixed blessing. A mixed blessing is something that is both good and bad. For example, being really beautiful can be a mixed blessing. On one hand, you look great and may be treated really well by some people. On the other hand, you look great and may be treated badly by other people. So when we use this expression, we often use the terms "on one hand" and "on the other hand." Here is another blessing expression. It is a little more complicated. A blessing in disguise. First of all, a disguise hides something that you do not want seen or noticed. For example, a secret agent might wear a disguise to hide her identity, or a bottle of perfume might disguise an unpleasant smell. So a blessing in disguise is a bad event or situation, but the outcome or result is actually good. Here's how to use the expression blessing in disguise.
So how was your high school reunion?
Oh, I got sick and couldn't go.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Actually, it was a blessing in disguise. It turns out my two best friends from high school couldn't go either. So we're going to take another trip together next month.
That sounds like even more fun.
It will be. They are the only people I wanted to see anyway.
Hey, how's everything going? I haven't seen you in a while.
Things are great. For starters, I got fired last month.
Oh, sorry. So why are things great? Getting fired is terrible.
Well, yes. But this time, it was truly a blessing in disguise. You see, after I was fired, I found a new job, a better job that I really love. And it pays more.
Good for you. I'm glad you're able to count your blessings.
And that's all the time we have this week for Words and Their Stories. Now it's time for you to count your blessings. What are you thankful for? Until next time, I'm Ana Mateo.
VOA Learning English presents America's Presidents. Today we are talking about Jimmy Carter. His given name was James, but he liked to be called Jimmy. Carter was elected president in 1976. Until he campaigned for the office, few Americans knew who he was. But Carter said his lack of experience with the federal government made him the best candidate. After witnessing years of problems in the White House, many voters appeared to agree with him. However, Carter's inexperience also became a problem. Some of the issues he faced were complex, and at times, they seemed overwhelming. After only one term, Carter failed to get reelected. But in time, his public image improved. His years after leaving the White House are generally considered more successful than his time in office. Jimmy Carter was born in the southern state of Georgia. He was the oldest of four children. His father was a businessman. His mother was a nurse. The family owned a store, as well as a peanut farm and warehouse. Although the businesses did well, Jimmy Carter grew up very modestly. His family's house did not have electricity or running water. But he was hardworking and wanted to be successful. As a boy, he saved enough money to buy four houses. He earned more money by renting them to other people. He also decided to attend college at the United States Naval Academy, and in time, he did so. Carter was an excellent student, and he became a fine naval officer. As a midshipman, Carter worked on one of the country's first nuclear submarines. He later taught nuclear engineering to other crew members. But Carter's promising career in the Navy ended after only 7 years. His father was dying, and the family farm was in trouble. Carter, his wife, Rosalind, and their three sons decided to return to Georgia and try to save it. The first years back on the farm were difficult, but in time, the business became successful again. Carter began to turn his attention to other issues. He became involved in his church, local school, hospitals, and libraries. When he had a chance to compete for a position in the state Senate, he took it. As a politician, Carter developed an image as an independent thinker who tried to save the government money. He also acted and spoke strongly against racial discrimination. In Georgia at the time, many voters did not agree with Carter's support of racial equality. In 1966, even his own Democratic Party did not choose him to be its candidate to represent Georgia in the U.S. Senate. So Carter began campaigning for the office of state governor instead. In 1970, he was elected. As Georgia's governor, Carter was known as a social and political reformer. However, historian Robert Strong notes that Carter did not always work well with others in his party. Strong teaches at Washington and Lee University in Lexington, Virginia. He writes that some Georgia lawmakers believed Carter was arrogant. He could appear to think he was morally right, and they were morally wrong.
Carter's difficulty in getting along with other officials proved to be one of the problems he would later face. But in the presidential election of 1976, many Americans seemed to like this quality. The little-known governor from Georgia defeated the sitting president, Gerald Ford. Carter won, in part, by saying that he was different than other politicians. He was, he said, a Washington outsider. Then suddenly, Carter was the biggest insider of all, the American president. One of the things Carter wanted to do was change the image of the president. Earlier leaders, such as Richard Nixon and Lyndon Johnson, had increased the power of the presidency. Nixon had also been shown to be dishonest and resigned from office. Carter promised never to lie to the American people, and on the day of his swearing in as president, he purposefully tried to keep things simple. He walked to the White House from the U.S. Capitol building instead of riding in the back of an automobile. His wife wore clothes that she had worn in public before. The National First Ladies Library notes that her choice of clothing sent a message of an old American value of thrift or respecting money and not spending it needlessly. What she wore was meaningful because the country was going through difficult economic times. The Carters wanted to show that the new government would work to cut costs. They also wanted to show that they were there to help the American people, not enjoy the powers of the White House. But in the end, the Carter administration received poor ratings in surveys of public opinion. President Carter had trouble dealing with U.S. lawmakers, even when his party was in control of Congress. One result was that Carter could not advance many of his ideas for legislation. He appeared ineffective. Many historians point out that, in fact, Carter had a number of successes. He helped reduce the country's dependence on foreign oil. He took steps to make the federal government more efficient and to improve the environment. He appointed a number of women and racial minorities to top government jobs, an important move at a time when many were pressing for women's rights and civil rights. And in many cases, Carter supported human rights causes, both in the United States and around the world. But the public generally did not see Carter for his successes. Instead, many Americans blamed him for the country's economic problems. Some also disliked the way he spoke to them. In one speech, Carter blamed the country's troubles on what he called a crisis of confidence. Some listeners were offended. He also decided that the U.S. would not attend the 1980 Olympic Games in Moscow. The move was meant to punish the Soviet Union for its involvement in Afghanistan, but many Americans believed the move mostly hurt young American Olympians. The administration also faced other problems. The president was never accused of wrongdoing, but other high-level officials were. So was the president's brother, Billy. As a result, Jimmy Carter's public image for honesty suffered. Then came the Iran hostage crisis. The conflict between the United States and Iran had a long history. One part involved the Shah of Iran. The U.S. government had supported his rise to power, partly because American interests wanted to control Iran's oil. But the Shah severely abused his power. Many Iranians resisted. Some wanted a leader who would more closely obey Islamic teachings. In 1979, under pressure from those Iranians and others, the Shah fled the country. By now, he was suffering from cancer. So, as a humanitarian act, President Carter permitted the Shah to come to the United States for medical treatment. The move made Iranians angry. In protest, a group of students seized the U.S. Embassy in Tehran, the capital of Iran. They took 90 people, including 66 Americans, hostage. Carter worked hard to get the hostages released. He tried diplomatic negotiations and economic restrictions, but his efforts did not work. Finally, he tried a secret military operation. He sent 8 helicopters and a team of special forces to enter the embassy and rescue the hostages. But that operation failed too. The weather was bad. 3 of the helicopters crashed. 8 Americans were killed. And the public's approval of Jimmy Carter dropped even more. After 444 days, the remaining hostages were released. In exchange, the U.S. government agreed to end some of its economic sanctions against Iran and promised not to interfere in the country's affairs. None of the hostages had been seriously hurt. But the crisis was the final blow to Carter's presidency. A few months before they were released, his effort to seek re-election failed. As president, Carter did not meet the high expectations he had set for himself, and he faced some unusually difficult situations. His presidency also suffered from his problems communicating effectively with Congress, the media, and the American people. But his 4 years as president did leave several marks on the office. For one, he showed that the U.S. president could help other nations and sides resolve their disputes. Carter's best-known success as president was his help negotiating the Camp David Accords. The Accords were a peace agreement between Egypt and Israel. Carter led the talks at Camp David in Maryland. Carter's efforts to protect human rights overseas also influenced the foreign policy of later presidents. In time, his work as a defender of human rights has become his most important legacy. Several years after leaving the presidency, he founded the Carter Presidential Center at Emory University in Atlanta, Georgia. The center seeks to prevent and resolve conflicts, enhance freedom and democracy, and improve health. In addition to his work there, Carter has helped build houses for people who need them, written books, and negotiated with world leaders to take steps toward peace. In 2002, Carter received the Nobel Peace Prize for his efforts. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And that's the Learning English podcast for today. Thank you, Kelly, for that report. And thanks to our VOA colleagues for their work on the program. On a sad note, we want to let our listeners know that Rosalind Carter died on November 19th. She was 96. I'm Dan Friedel.
And I'm Katie Weaver.